guys, just to add to your point and returning back to inventory, I also need to see what RSA's guidance is, because if both rehab dollars offset your lost inventory, then that could very well be factored in to say, well, that was otherwise offset, so we can't use these funds to replenish your inventory if you already got that offset in some other way. So I don't have an answer for how that would work. So if somebody were to pursue getting reimbursement of lost inventory, let's say out of those rehab dollars as an example, and then RSA comes back and says, okay, well, if you got your inventory reimbursed, your inventory loss reimbursed, then it was offset, so you can't claim it twice. And then the other thing I wanted to swing back to, which I found interesting, and I'm sorry, maybe you picked up on that. I did not specifically pick up on losses in calendar year 2020, because COVID did not impact all of 2020. It impacted in March going forward. And so you're talking only 9 months out of a 12-month period. So to compare 2020 to 2019, let's say it's a Schedule C to Schedule C. Well, again, you've got a nine-month period in 2020 that was impacted, but you're comparing it against 12 months of unimpacted the prior year. So you may want to think about saying, all right, if they're saying it has to be 2020, then maybe it would be business reports looking at the same time period of those 2 years, so it's a like-to-a-like comparison. But I think those are the kinds of things that RSA is looking for the committee to say, this is what we are recommending. I don't really have those answers, like you said, Mr. Chairman. Without the RSA-specific guidance, some of these things are going to be a point-in-time type of discussion.
Tyrell, was that you?
No, that was not me.
That was Chad, I think, and this is me. Yeah, this is me, Shelley. Question, Brian. I did watch the webinar, and from what they were suggesting, Keith and you are on the same page, but the lady who was telling us that she didn't have any answers as towards tax-related issues, will RSA also most likely touch on that, or is that... That's
one
issue for taxes, and then the other issue is, I'm sorry?
I said, I honestly don't know if RSA is going to delve into tax law kinds of things. My guess is that they may not, but I don't know.
Okay, then my next question is, so if me being myself, Keith being whoever, Frank being whoever, all losses are different across the board. If they're slotted the 11,001, blah, 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 whatever that is, and me, myself, I don't get 11,000. I get, let's just say, $500 of that. What happens to the rest of it? Does it stay in the program, or does it go back into federal land? What happens to the remaining funds? We don't know any of that yet.
We are allowed to use whatever remains after reimbursing the facility managers. We're allowed to use it for the other allowable purposes of the program, but only until the end of the calendar year, and then we have to give it back. That's my understanding. Now, again, I'm looking off of memory, and I'd like to think it's calendar year and not fiscal year, because the fiscal year ends September 30th.
It's fiscal year. The funds have to be distributed by September 30th of
2021. So that means we will probably get the money some point late spring and have almost no opportunity to utilize it for anything other than this disbursement, because the reality is that's a very short window of time to expend the rest. Now, maybe we could find out, for instance, as you know, we use the BEP funds for salaries maybe we could use some of this money for sales. I don't know. I think that we'll have to see some of that guidance come out.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry, Chad. I guess you were not speaking at the same time. I guess you're free to go ahead now.
Go ahead, Chad.
Yeah, I know our major impact was March 20th, was when I closed, for example. But I previously, in February, early February, started to feel an impact from the COVID, where the building started issuing out laptops to the employees, and the population of the building decreased significantly in the beginning months of February in preparation for what happened in March. So are we just going to look at March when we close, or are we going to look at our previous, let's say, February 2020 to February 2019?
That's up to the committee to decide what your preference is. And again, if you want to go full year to full year, then that's fine. You still want to talk about whether you want to go Schedule C to Schedule C or business report to business report. I was just pointing out that 2019, all of calendar year 2019, was based on 12 full months with no COVID,
yes.
Whereas 2020, it isn't 12 full months with COVID. So you may not have a pure comparison, but I think it's up to the committee. And if you decide you want it to be, again, calendar year based on business report, calendar year based on Schedule C, but that's the kind of thing that RSA is looking for the committee to weigh in on.
Gotcha. Okay.
But at the same time, if you do calendar year, again, it's the money. These are, it's how each of us interpret it. So I'm not saying what Brian says is right, what I'm saying is right. But it's just, these are the discussions we have to come up with something. But I was under the impression you look at calendar year because, it's looking at your losses to replace some of your losses. So you may have still made some money in January or maybe halfway through February, like Chad said. I mean, my numbers started to dip, come March 1st because they were already sending people home. And, I still made money in January and February. So if you look at the whole, the losses are from, whether it be business report or Schedule C, whatever you want to call it, but for the calendar year of 2019, you made X amount of dollars. Calendar year 2020, say if you used to make $30,000 and you only made $10,000, if you lost, you lost $20,000 there, because you did make some. So, it's to offset your losses for the year. My understanding. I'm just offering my opinion. This is, I don't know how you prorate it for 9 months, but that's something we could think about. Anyone else with thoughts, comments? What we can do as a committee is we could set up a meeting. We have conference call lines also. We could set up a meeting with just ourselves to kind of hash these out, or not really hash them out, but to come up with some even questions, because we might have a question that might be answered in this guidance. That's what I think, that's what I'm hoping for. And it was supposed to leave it kind of loose. So it wasn't supposed to be too tricky for us, but you never know until we get it. And I haven't heard anything about that coming out. I'm not saying, no one's saying it's coming out next week or the week after. I'm a little frustrated that it hasn't been given to us already so we can move forward, especially when these funds have to be spent by September 30th. So the longer they drag their feet, the longer we drag ours.
Steve, this is Amos. I'm just thinking of, it's just a thought coming to mind, just based on my sales from, or income from 2019, and then looking at my business, my sales before it shut down in 2020. Just from the projection, at the time of the shutdown in 2020, it's most likely my income was going to increase than what I made in 2020. We have to wait for the regulation to come out before it's beyond anyone's control right now. But then if you look at it,
my income was going to be more than what I made in 2019. So I was just thinking, you know, should it be based, you know, on your income due to the past year, or maybe the potential of what you would have made, you know, in a year of the shutdown, you know.
Yeah,
tough to prove what you would have made. You know, I think we you know, talk about it, but if we're in order to base the loss, you have to look at hard numbers, not, you know, what you would have, you know, you're assuming you would have made more, but I don't know that. I don't know how you prove that you were going to make more. I'm just looking, you know, because we're going to have to use hard numbers to make a determination.
I know what you're saying, but I was just thinking, you know, just looking first from January to March as compared to January to December of 2019, you know, it was most likely, you know. I think it's just a thought.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we need to do, is throw ideas out there.
Mm-hmm. So Shelley, I know you mentioned fiscal year September 30th. Where did you get that from?
From all the calls I've listened in on, and calls, the trainings I've been on that they specifically spoke about this $20 million.
Okay.
It was September 30th, I haven't heard that change yet.
No, I'm just asking, is it written? I know, like you're saying, people are verbalizing it. Is this something written somewhere, or this is just where they're... Because I thought our fiscal year was July, or is it federal fiscal?
It's federal.
Okay, federal.
That's why they're saying they're trying to get this money out, because if you don't get it till June, say, you know, some other states have set-aside, and they're wondering if they could use it for set-aside. Well, that doesn't leave them much time to even figure out what their set aside would be, because it leaves them 3 months, you know, or July, August. So, yeah, it leaves them 3 months if you get the money in June. So that's why they're trying to somewhat rush this along to get the money out to the SLAs, but at the same time, they're trying to rush it along, but we still don't have the guidance. So I think they need to be rushing this guidance along so that we can, you know, make our decision and get our applications in.
Is there any information on how the incentive program will affect this money, or there's no information on that either?
I don't know.
Incentive, is that just us? I don't think, since incentive is just us, though.
Yeah,
Carl, Brian?
This is Brian. That's a very, very good question, of which I don't know that we're going to delve into something that's that unique to Connecticut. But
right.
Basically, the fair minimum return is the federal language that we base our incentive plan on. So they may give some guidance on fair minimum return and whether or not that is used to offset. To any extent. I think that, you know, unfortunately, as I'm listening in and on some of this good dialogue, there was some guidance that initially came out, but I think that we're not really able, sadly, to give very definitive answers here. Even as I thought some of the things we were going to talk about today, we might at least be able to settle on, you know, does everybody get up to a certain amount and that's it, or if somebody's had much higher losses because they had a much larger facility, would you want to bring them up to what their loss was, or would you want to say, no, you know, let's even it out so no one gets more than a certain amount, or do you want to prorate it so if you run out of money, you know, then everybody gets an equal share, or do you want to say, well, we'll only prorate if somebody's getting reimbursed at a loss rate of higher than $50,000, but other than that, or 10,000 or whatever. But as I'm hearing this conversation, and I know RSA is looking for these committees to be making some decisions, but I don't know that we have the information that's going to help you right now make the decision, but I also know that whatever conversations you have where these decisions are made needs to be a public meeting where there are minutes taken, and those minutes are provided to RSA or made or published so that RSA knows they're there. So I guess having a sidebar conversation as a committee, I would just caution that while you certainly are always welcome to talk to each other, if you're going to be actually conducting the business of the committee, I believe that has to be in a publicly noticed meeting. So, you know, just keep bear that in mind.
Well, Brian, with that being said, the allotment of the money is what it is per operator, right? That's what we should
no,
be...
No, per dog. No, no, that's
wait.
Not correct, Shelley. The
okay.
amount we are getting in Connecticut was based on an arbitrary figure, and Tyrell sort of explained how they
right.
came to that figure. They just took
no, that's what I mean. So the allotment is kind of already just set.
Correct.
That's
we're getting
$313,550.
Yes, that's what we're getting. Is a
stellar. Okay. It's done. Okay.
That's what we're getting.
Right. Just to add to this, and I think this might be just of additional help, is that the reality is this: you're getting $313,000. That's approximately, I believe, maybe 45% of the total amount lost from operating. What we do know is that you don't have enough to make anyone as close as whole, even when you're factoring everyone's loss. But what we do know is that they're looking for basically framework, as to Brian's point. So I think maybe that the thought process of knowing that there's so much unknown, but obviously knowing or maybe possibly establishing just a base point as to how would you like to see the funds distributed, you know, knowing, let's say everything goes okay, they say, okay, Connecticut, here's your $313,000, here's your exclusions. After we deduct exclusions, how would you guys like to see the actual funds, whatever that amount remains, be distributed? And to Brian's point earlier, is it by a percentage base? Is it making those under a certain dollar as close to whole as possible? Then taking the remaining pot and giving it up to the larger facilities and taking that number and maybe dividing that by 60% to ensure that everyone gets an opportunity of funds, which could potentially work to everyone's favor in the sense that, let's say if we have operators that made under $10,000 or under $11,000, then right off the bat we know that the $11,000 individual amount cannot be exceeded. So we know that. So let's say an operator makes $3,000. Would you guys maybe be in the mindset to say, you know, this guy only, you know, he made $3,000. I'm just using this number. Last year or this year, he showed $1,000. Okay, $2,000, here you are. That made that person whole. It's, you know, it's obviously your discretion, but you made the smaller location whole in which they should be happy because we know you can't exceed the $11,000, right? So if an operator made less than $11,000, then you know you can't exceed that number. So you made that person happy and whole, and now you take that remaining pot to those facilities that over the $11,000 amount, and then maybe make a determination on the percentage used to make people as whole as that. I mean, does that sound like something that might be a framework of discussion?
I like that idea. Yeah, if nothing else, a starting point for understanding how to move forward.
So basically, go off of whatever the exclusions are,
correct.
And then from there, try to make the smaller man as whole as possible, and then from there, work on everyone else?
You could potentially do that, because the one fact that we do know today is that no one can exceed the $11,000, right? So you know...
Right.
So knowing that right there gives you a good base as to, okay, if a person can be potentially made whole not to exceed that $11,000, which is not the individual, you know, operator's loss, it's the average number, but we're just using that $11,000 threshold. If it doesn't, you know, if the amount does not exceed the individual allotment amount, it's a potential. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just stating that might be a good base to, for discussion. I think it kind of maybe starts the discussion in a direction that I think would potentially be favorable to everyone.
Not corrupt, but just to add to what Tyrell is saying, but perhaps clarify it a little bit. There's nothing in what I have read that says you must cap it at $11,000. So if it was the committee's pleasure that somebody who lost $50,000 gets the $50,000, there is nothing in what I have seen so far that says, no, that's not allowed. They cannot get more than $11,000 because that means that person is still left with a $40,000 loss that's uncompensated, where in Tyrell's example, somebody who only lost $3,000 was made 100% whole. So the example you just had there, somebody who still has $40,000 of loss because you capped it at $11,000 per person, that's an individual that isn't even close to being made whole. So if your concept is to make people whole but only up to a certain dollar amount, you may want to recognize that for those who have larger facilities, they may not come anywhere near being made whole if you cap it at whatever your figure is. So those,
well, it still needs to be because we only have a certain, the 300-something thousand bucks.
Correct. Okay, you're right, Shelley, but keep in mind that if in the example Tyrell gave, let's say an operator in 2019 only made $3,000. So they're
right,
going to ever be eligible for $11,000 because their losses wouldn't have been anywhere near $11,000. So
correct.
Not everybody made $11,000 of uncompensated losses.
Right.
So some people maybe have $8,000 in uncompensated. Some may have $23,000 in uncompensated. But you've got to figure out, okay, how, what's the fairest way to do this so that, you know, is it fair to say that somebody with a $100,000 a year location who lost $80,000 that year should be capped at $11,000, or somebody who typically would have an $8,000 location gets completely held harmless? You know, those are the kinds of things that the committee needs to weigh in on, because we're not the ones that will make that decision. The committee needs to tell us, how do you want to approach that?
Yeah, that's not the intent. Like the figures I used before. You know, if you made $20,000 in 2019, you made $10,000 in 2020, and then we give you $11,000. Now you just made $1,000 more than you did the year before. That's not the intent of this money. This money is to shore up what you lost. So like the smaller locations, you know, they're going to get less money, and the bigger locations are going to get a bigger piece of the pie. It wouldn't be capped at 11 because that would be unfair to, like, the, you know, the examples Brian just gave. You know, so if some people made less than 10, you know, they're not going to get close to 11. But yeah, somebody that lost $40,000 is going to get a bigger piece of the pie because they lost more. You know, they have bigger expenses outside of their business, you know, because they're used to making X amount of dollars, and then they have a, you know.
Brian, I have a question then. Is the agency trying to use Volk rehab money, or we're going to wait and see what RSA comes out with, so if we use of that money first and then Volk rehab, how are we moving forward with disbursement of Volk rehab anyway?
Okay, Voc Rehab dollars are utilized based on vocational rehab policies and regulations. So a client who's been found eligible for Voc Rehab has an individualized plan for employment and needs inventory replenished in order to reopen their location. Would have an authorization put out there so that when they reopen their location, they can start drawing against that authorization to start replenishing the inventory at their reopened facility. But what we don't know is, will that money be counted as offset money? Meaning that if you do access those Voc Rehab dollars, and let's say you open your location in April, and you're a Voc Rehab client, you get $3,000 of replenishable inventory, so you draw that $3,000. Will that then be considered as an offset, meaning that whatever you can get out of this, they're going to say, wait a minute, Voc Rehab already gave you $3,000 of that lost inventory, so you can't count that twice. We don't I can't tell anybody, don't go after bulk rehab replenishment of your inventory, because when you open your facility, if you need inventory to open your facility and bulk rehab...
We're going to utilize bulk rehab, right. Okay.
Yeah, it's the only viable option for you to have the money in order to get your inventory so you can reopen in April or May or whatever. Then that's your option, because you need inventory to open. But I don't know if RSA is going to say, well, that's very nice, and we're glad you did that, Voc Rehab helped you, but that was a $3,000 loss that Voc Rehab just gave you back. So they may say that's offset some of your loss. So just keep, you know, again, keep that in mind. But absent the guidance that we're all hoping to have by today, we don't have a definitive answer for you.
So, can I ask a question? What about the people that already, some of them got two rounds of PPP? Shouldn't maybe the facilities that got zero be considered first? Wouldn't that be fair also? Some of us got rejected all the way across the board except for unemployment, and some facilities have gotten already second round of the small business or the PPP.
You can't, the second round of PPP was given out in 2021. You can't use funds that were replaced. 2021 has nothing to do with 2020. So if you got a second round of PPP, that's what I'm saying. If the second round of PPP came in 2021, that doesn't go against you for what you lost in 2020.
I do understand what you're saying, but I'm just saying, we're talking about being fair. How do we want to come to an agreement as a group? What would be the fairest for everybody? If some people did get the second round, just being fair with each other, why shouldn't the people that got nothing maybe have a little bit, you know, further consideration?
Because you can't use funds in 2021 for the losses in 2020. It's unfortunate, but if something, like, I didn't get PPP for first or second round, but I'm just saying, if somebody got PPP second round in 2021, that's not going to go against them in 2020. That wouldn't be fair to them. That's, you know, this money is just for 2020.
So, does that also include those who got the grant from the state? Did
you have to include that?
Do you have to include it? Because those who got it in 2021, do you have to include it in 2020?
The grant, I'm going to put it out there. I was approved for the grant, the $5,000, but I never received it until 2021, but the approval came in 2020.
That's something we could discuss. I don't know.
But that's what I'm saying, that we should... The losses is from 2020. That's why they approved the money for you. When you get it is irrelevant. That's what I'm trying to say. Some people got the money twice, but the loss is all for 2020. Whenever you get it, doesn't really make sense. And some of us got nothing, never. We were denied both.
It depends on what you use it for. I didn't use my funds towards 2020. I'm going to use that $5,000 moving forward with my business, which is 2021.
With my situation, I'm one of the few that are actually current. I'm currently using the funds. So that's another thing. If I receive money and I'm still in operation, I'm using that already.
Offsetting your losses or for moving forward with your business?
It's just moving forward. It's the same thing because I'm not taking personal funds to put into the business. I'm using what they granted me. So to me, it's like a wash. It's offsetting and it's moving forward. I'm in a place where I didn't close. They didn't utilize the space for their own needs. So I'm still in operation. So I'm using it for both of those things, moving forward and offsetting losses. So
something we could discuss.
Yeah. Everyone's case is so unique that, like Keith said, we may have to come up with our own little sidebar later. And everyone who's been affected, we always say these calls are very important, and people continue not to come in. So, Keith, if we do our thing and, you know, do our separate thing, like Brian said, have it a public meeting, everyone comes up with their own negotiate. People who don't have a voice, they can't complain in the long term. You have to be able to make your voice heard in what you want to be done.
Mr. Chairman, it's Brian. If I may, only because I'm taking a time check and seeing there's still several other items on the agenda, and it does seem like the conversation today is leading toward folks really needing that RSA guidance. I'm wondering if what Shelley is suggesting might be a course of action, which is as soon as the guidance comes out, that a public
Correct.
Meeting gets announced after that guidance is distributed, maybe not just to the committee members, but to the entire cadre of vending facility operators, where they're all invited if they wish to participate in that meeting. They actually get this opportunity, and that that's an agenda item of one, just as one
right.
topic for that meeting. Maybe that's the approach. And then I can tell RSA the committee met. The committee has many, many questions. They don't believe they're at a point where they can advise RSA how they want to spend the money until RSA issues out that is very important guidance that they are eagerly awaiting. You know, I could put something like that back at RSA.
Yeah, because there was no way we were going to come to a conclusion at this meeting anyway, but at least we have some people that were able to they have some thoughts put out their ideas to at least start the conversations. I mean, we can't go anywhere with it today, but that would be this money affects everybody, not just
teaming partner should appear on the teaming agreement. So that's pretty straightforward. The proposal submitted to the Coast Guard Academy should clearly state that it was authored by the teaming partner selected by the licensed blind vendor. And should the Coast Guard Academy accept SB's proposal, following any negotiations of the proposal, a contract will be drafted. The draft contract will be reviewed by the Attorney General's office before it would ever be implemented, which means that the contract would have to follow certain requirements that the state of Connecticut has for language in the contract, and I'm sure that the Coast Guard has language that they also want to require in the contract. So that will be part and parcel of the full negotiation process to come up with a contract that all parties could agree and sign. And typically it is our commissioner who signs contracts on behalf of our agency. So with these three things in consideration, it is clear that what we need to do is select the person based on the, you know, the regulations for the seniority, promotion and transfer and seniority. We need to select the person. The person then needs to do their due diligence to interview and select who they want to be their teaming partner. And then that teaming partner would work with that blind vendor to prepare the proposal to submit to us, so that we would have it in time to submit it to the Coast Guard, but satisfying the requirements in item two, which is that it would clearly state that what we are submitting was authored by the teaming partner. And so that would be, I think, the two steps that we would be prepared to take. So step number one is using promotion and transfer. We need to select the operator for this location. And now we don't have the location. That's number one. Number two, we don't even yet have from the Coast Guard the RFP being released, let alone I did send them a follow-up email saying that we want you to affirm this is a Randolph Shepherd priority facility. This is a Randolph Shepherd location. They have not responded to that. So, but I did put out there that we believe this is a Randolph Shepherd location and we want the proposal to state the Randolph Shepherd priority. Now, maybe when the proposal comes out, it will state that priority, but they have not indicated one way or another. They have not responded.
So, Brian, if an operator is selected, let's say, for promotion transfer, and this location isn't even available yet, but he's selected to find a team partner and he's going to do all the slate work, does that mean that that operator would forfeit their current locations as it would in regular promotion transfer?
We don't have the location for them to take over yet, so basically it would be a provisional. We could not in good conscience say, give up your current location on the hope, on the hope that all of these things come together and the Coast Guard awards this to us, and then you get to run the location. But we also recognize that the only way that we even be in the ballpark of competing for this is to have the blind vendor begin the process of working with their selected teaming partner to at least be ready for when the proposal comes out. We don't know when the proposal is going to come out, but to at least be ready so that when, for instance, Perry Smith says, okay, I just found out, here it is, then that blind vendor and that teaming partner are ready to go. Because I imagine that there's not going to be a very long window of opportunity to submit a proposal.
Brian, this is Shirley. I have a question. Do we know who's under, who's doing it now? Who's running it right
now? I heard the name. I don't remember it. I'm sorry. Yeah. Perry Smith did share it. Frank may know who's running it. I personally do not.
Okay.
It's a company called Aramark. I can't tell you anything about them. Yeah.
Oh, Aramark. No, I've heard of them.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, Aramark.
Okay. So I think that would be my recommendation, is that Tyrell begin the process. As a matter of fact, the very next thing on the agenda is promotion and transfer list. But that would be my recommendation. Unless the committee feels otherwise. I don't think you need a motion for this, but it's up to you. It's up to you, Mr. Chairman.
No, I don't necessarily think we need a motion for it. We're just going through the motions to get the, you know, it's already in our regulations to select off the promote and transfer list, and then when the RFP comes out, we have to vote on the actual location. But I don't think we have to vote on the using the promote and transfer list. I think that's already dictated.
I need a motion from a committee member. I'm sorry to
even on that committee?
It doesn't matter. It just has to be a committee member.
All right. I put forth the motion to submit the Colton transfer list.
Okay. Can I get a second?
I second it.
Second. Okay, now this is the part I missed. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. So all those in favor of accepting the promote and transfer list as presented, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. Any abstentions? Now the motion carries.
Excuse me. This is Brenda.
Yes.
Who made the motion, please?
Chad Farr.
Thank you.
Moving to the next agenda item, facility reopen plan. I just wanted to quickly let everyone know that the locations that we're looking to move or anticipate opening up, does someone want to speak? Those facilities in particular, I would say the seasonal locations, I am preparing to work with the field reps to assuring that we get those locations in proper order, anticipating reopening during the normal seasonal schedule. In addition to those locations, I think we must keep an eye on the community colleges as well, as the vaccine is really making their way into the state, and just being sure that there's a population viable for reopening. So. And other facilities as well, even the courthouse. You know, things are starting to move. I think we're all starting to see that around us. So I just wanted to touch base on that and make everyone aware that, you know, we are really going to keep our eyes open going forward and making sure that we don't miss the boat and that we prepare ourselves for any possibility of reopening on all levels of the program. And that's in every area. So. From D&E to seasonal to community college to state buildings, you know, it's important. I think we're going to take a potential turn.
Yep. Tyrell? With that being said, as we're going to start, you know, looking forward, would now be a good time, since a lot of locations are currently closed, a lot of operators may not know what it's going to take as far as plexiglass and all of that stuff, would this be a good time to maybe do some Zoom training, something of that nature, to get people prepared?
I would say
requirements.
Right. I say the thing is right now is I would want to assess each location as the opportunity comes up, because to your point, the requirements are changing probably monthly, every other week. You know, we're getting guidance weekly, and so it may be premature to start aligning ourselves for reopening without even having the established knowledge of the building occupancy. But I wouldn't think that this would, or from a safety standpoint, hinder or delay any operation once we get the green light, or once we feel that the motion can be made to resume business. So I think there's plenty of equipment out there, and I just think that when it comes to the point of assessing each operation, that we'll make, you know, we'll move quickly on strategizing a safety measure to resume business. I don't think that's something that we can broadly head up across the board, not knowing how agencies and buildings are going to look to resume in the future. So I think the key is just staying in contact and really just assessing the viability. Actually, all right, so after that, Chairman Haley, there is one item I would like to add to the agenda that I did not add, and that is in regards to Catriona McDonald and from the NFB, who has reached out to our agency to provide a training in the near future. I would say either, most likely I would say on the annual meeting, a training that would provide a real guidance as to how we should look to proceed going forward, and she's been an intricate part. I'm sure you've been on many calls in which you've heard some of her trainings as to providing operators suggestions that they feel would be, you know, valuable in returning life after COVID. I did reach out to Katjana, and when she reached out to me, offering a service, inquiring if her trainings could be accessible through teleconference, because a lot of them are through Zoom, and she said certainly she could administer a training that would be just as valuable through conference call. My thoughts were, and just hearing her and having conversations and dealings with her, I think she'd be phenomenal to bring on to maybe the annual training, as we typically have a trainer on all of our annual meetings, to present something that I think would be right in line with today and the challenges all of the operations face going forward. I know Brian has had some dealings with her as well, and he has found her to be very sharp as well. And so I just kind of wanted to see if the committee would be willing to make a motion on having her as a presenter at the annual meeting.
I think it's a great idea. Like you said, we normally do a training at the annual meeting, and I think that this would be a perfect time to do something like this. Do you want any form of a motion?
Yes, this way we can be able to reach back out and set financial obligation to have her today.
Yeah. Anybody on the committee like to make a motion to move forward with the annual training for our annual meeting in September? Any committee member?
Motion for training in September.
All right, that was Chad. Can I get a second?
I second it.
Who seconded it?
No, Dave Bellaggi.
Dave Bellaggi. Any further discussion? All those in favor of adding the annual training to the September meeting, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say no. Any abstentions? Motion carries.
Okay. All right. And so next on the agenda is open forum.
Open forum. And any committee member or non-committee member?
It's Brandy. Okay. I got something to say, as always.
Yes. No, that's fine.
So I'm curious as to the incentive changes, being on the regulations, I learned a lot about how this all works. And the incentive payments, from what I learned in the regulations, we have to submit by April for the first 6 months or past 6 months of the year of what has happened. So I believe a lot of people put themselves in the promote and transfer, not only for promote and transfer, but also for the incentive program. And I wonder how the committee plans on handling possibly 17 people asking for incentive payments prior to giving us other money out, because I know there are a lot of us, as Carmella pointed out, who didn't get the funds, any of the grants, any PPP, and some of us didn't get full unemployment or unemployment, and again, some of us don't get Social Security payments, et cetera, et cetera. So I was just wondering, instead of taking so long to get this money from the federal program, if you guys have anything in the works on how we can make sure the incentive program is explained to the people who are, I'm pretty sure, interested in it, and make sure that they get it, as well as maybe let them know that, hey, this could affect the money that you get from going forward from the federal program, but also how that works, how long it takes to get your payment from this thing. And have you guys also considered and thought about, again, because it is taking so long to get this money out and so many people are struggling, about possibly doing the vacation pay again, like we did last year?
This is Shelley. I have a question. I have a statement. Is an incentive, whatever incentive that's coming up in April, you should have signed up for this way back then, this time last year.
Am I according
to
the regulations? No. as long we signed up for this year, so according to the way that it would go, the Toronto transfer is what entitles you to the is part of the requirements for the incentive program. So technically, anybody who's on the incentive program from last year, or from the Toronto transfer last year, also who maybe didn't get incentive last year, would be qualified for this 6 months, under my understanding. And then in October,
because incentive payment coming out in April is from the prior month before that. So technically, you would have had to be on incentive from last year.
Exactly, which some of the people that are on the list were, such as myself. I was on the promoted transfer list last year. So technically, I am eligible for these 6 months.
From my understanding, is promotion and transfer and incentive two separate things, right? So promotion and transfer
The way that our regulations are written, to promote, in order to receive the incentive package, you have to be on the promote and transfer list. It's a requirement of receiving an incentive payment.
So because
you signed up for promote and transfer, doesn't mean you're going to get, like, I technically never get incentive before because I'm in seasonal location. But I always apply for promote and transfer because, as my field rep said, why not? You never know what's going to come up. So I always apply for it, not trying to get the incentive, but for promote and transfer purposes. But now it benefits me because I can now qualify, because I've on the promote and transfer, which is part of the requirement, I qualify for the incentive payments for this 6 months. And my point
That's my question for clarification. Don't you have to sign that I do want it, or just because of promotion and transfer, you can get it anyway? That's my question.
You have to apply for it. This is Brian.
You have to apply for it. But it doesn't cover last year. That's what I'm trying to say. This payment coming out, correct me if I'm wrong, coming out in April, is from prior months, correct?
My point is you have to apply by April also. So you get paid in April, but you also have to submit in April.
Tyrell, can you please explain this? Because from what I'm getting, from what I'm hearing Brandy saying, that's not how I understood it.
I guess I'm somewhat confused just out of the question.
Right.
I don't think it is being paid for prior, right? So
right.
You're factoring this time around applicant to prior payment responsibility. So prior to the most recent application, that
right.
was due back, I believe, what was it, January?
Correct.
That's moving forward. So
right.
you're not these people or this group of people that want to apply or look for it going forward. We're paying the people that applied last year.
Exactly. What I'm asking as a person who is people technically, when is the next point that you have to apply to the next, like Shelley was asking on the last call, when do I have to submit my paperwork for my incentive payment?
It already passed up
January.
Okay, so that was January to get paid for April.
For July of last year.
No, it's July of last year to December of last year. Like January 1st of this year to June 30th, you'll get paid in October of this year. So it's
correct.
6 months previous.
Correct.
So is when the second payment is the payment that I'm kind of most talking about, because that would be the payment that now all the people on the promote and transfer and incentive thing would be able to qualify for, correct?
October, yes. You're all the money that you're making, or like whatever you're not making, but the period is July 1st through June 30th. That
right.
You'll get paid that money, and you know, it's usually October 1st, but whenever. And then as of July 1st to December 31st, you get that the next following April.
Correct.
The payments are April and October.
Okay, so I have the dates confused. But again, my point is, technically, all 17 people can apply for the incentive program, correct?
Correct. But they have to be done. But it has to be done by December of the previous year. For example, if you want to get July 1st through December 31st of last year, you have to be on that promotion list before the end of the year.
What about to do January to June to January to June this year?
That's what you only go on the
December to June. Excuse me.
Oh my God.
The transfer list is done once a year. That's why the letter has to be sent in before the end of the year, whatever the fiscal year is. So you have to send it in. So everybody that had it in by December 31st of 2020 will get the payment this year. It has to be the previous promote. Yeah.
Mm.
And so if you weren't on last year, you'll only get the payment, like, for the October payment. You're not going to get an April payment for this year.
Right. Which, again, 17 people technically qualify for right at this point in time.
But no, they don't qualify right now unless they had previously signed up for it way back last year in January.
Well, I'm talking about the new year, hon. I'm asking about now we're in the new year. We all just started a new year by a new promote and transfer, which starts today.
They don't
expect
Yeah. So you'll get that in October. My understanding is correct. You don't qualify for the April because you still have to do January 1st to do June 30th of this year to get your October payment. If you only signed up this year, it has to be this year.
Okay.
And is that correct?
Last year, then you can also fall in this category as well. If you signed up last year and this year,
correct,
you should be able to get two payments. If you only signed up this year, you should be able to get one payment.
One payment, that is correct. You get
in the grand scheme of that, is that's a lot of money that potentially is about to go out. And how is that?
But the incentive is also based on the money that you made. Like, they go off of your business reports every week. Like, you have to see how much money you made in those 6 months. Like, it's not a flat fee. Everybody just gets
It fluctuates, exactly. It fluctuates.
Yeah, but correct.
Because I get that point completely. But I'm just saying, there are, right now, of the 17 people that are on the promote and transfer list, and I believe Michelle and Frank are both on it, I'm not sure. There's only two people that I know that are open right now, though, so that means, they're the only ones with any kind of a balance of income coming in, if income coming in. I don't even know if they're making or if they're losing or how it's going for them. I'm just saying, as an example, I understand that it's going to fluctuate, and that's completely fair, but again, if everybody applies to this thing at one time, what's the plan to prepare for that, as well as how to educate other people about that, and how that will affect, how will that affect going forward with money from the federal government? And then, like I said, my second question was in regards to, has the committee considered possibly doing the vacation pay again, because it is taking so long for the federal money to come out, and there are so many people that are still struggling with not just their business stuff, but their own personal things as well.
This is Keith Chen back in. I don't know much about the incentive program, so I can't give you any guidance there. As far as the vacation pay, that would be something that we bring up to, the agency. And it would probably have to, I don't know if it's part of our discussions about the $20 million, as far as what
I think we need to know, first off, if that is going to be considered an offset or not an offset, because if it's considered an offset, that might influence some of the committee's preferences in discussions around, you know, which dollars do you want to use? And so I guess, you know, your committee can bring it up at the next meeting. Hopefully, though, we'll have that federal guidance by that meeting as well.
Brian, just for clarification, where did that money come from, the last allotment that was dispersed to the...
The vacation.
Where did that...
It came out of the BEC budget.
Just the budget itself, okay. That's all I wanted to know. All right.
It came out of the budget. So my point is that if you can get the same benefit out of these stimulus funds, then obviously I think those would probably be the preferred pot of money to pay it from. But again, if it's considered an offset, then getting that money right now out of BEC funds, meaning that you got an incentive payment, if you will, some not incentive from the incentive plan. I don't mean that. You got some offset money through this vacation pay. I just would want to know how they're going to treat that.
Right, because we've already been allotted some money, and they can also put in the RSA write-up that could be an offset. Okay.
Yeah, although it's 2021 money due again. And I just, we're doing a lot of speculation, unfortunately, because we don't have anything more definitive now. And you're always welcome at the next meeting to say, all right, let's vote on do we want to have, in lieu of having an operator cover our facility for a week this year, we want to get the equivalent like we did last year. I mean, you're certainly free to have that vote. I just been saying, until we see the RSA guidance, I'm not 100% certain that this only loss is in 2020. I guess I'm believing it is. Keith is certainly saying that that's what he was told on the national call, is that it's only in 2020 and that the monies have to be spent by September 30, 2021. And that's probably all very, very accurate. I just want to kind of see RSA reaffirming all of the questions you're all raising in some sort of a written question and answer format.
Okay.
Is that something we could circle back to? So now the guidance comes out and say that vacation pay is not part of the offset or whatever, could we circle back and get and do what we did last year and get that $1,200? Yeah, that wouldn't be that much, but it's an idea.
Absolutely could have a discussion and a vote on that.
Okay.
I'm sorry, this is Brandy again. I guess the point that I'm trying to make is, I think there are a lot of people who are not in such good positions right now and who could really use $1,200 because, like, I'm losing $200 a month. I'm paying in workman's comp, unemployment taxes, having to keep my cell phone on for my business, and this is not for my, like, seasonal, this is for, like, Manchester. These are things that I have to do. So, I feel like there are people, like, I with this money being said that it's not going to come out until June or July, like, some people would rather get the $1,200 now and take the deduction out of this money that's coming somewhere down the line, then wait until June and July and be like, oh, here's, you know, $5,000. Oh, and we can take that $1,200 now. So cool. Now you have, like, $1,000, let's say. But, hey, I could have used $1,200 three months ago when I decided not to pay this bill because I'm waiting on this money. They keep saying it's going to be coming, but we don't know when it's coming. I don't know if I'm the only person who's maybe in the same situation of kind of, like, trying to balance my financial situation, because again, I literally, my situation, I lost a lot of money last year, put a lot of money out, I lost a lot of money, I'm not getting any PPP, I didn't get any grants, my unemployment I only got for a small amount of time, like, I did open my other businesses, it didn't go very well, like, I'm at a very big loss, I have kids, like, I'm not trying to be like, oh, poor me, but I'm just saying, like, I know I'm not the only person in this situation. I feel like I'm kind of speaking up for a lot of other people who are maybe in the same boat as me and don't want to speak up. That, hey, like, I could use the vacation pay now. Can we please do that now? I'll take the $1,200 out of my thing later. That's fine. Like, I can't wait till July for
federal funds to come out and then be decided. And then, okay, so we get the money in July. Does it mean we actually get paid in July? I mean, we don't know when the money, so we have to spend it by September, but we could literally get the funds in July, which is all the way in to the third quarter. Like, you see what I'm saying? For again,
it shouldn't be that long. The funds shouldn't take that long. We were saying June as like a worst case scenario.
But that's when it'll be allocated and we'll actually have them, is what I'm thinking, based on.
No, the money's already allocated. The money's already allocated. We already have them.
But the regulations, but the we don't have any guidance on how to do it, and we, as a group today, are still saying, okay, we still need a little bit more guidance to even firm up how we're, what way we're going to split this money. So that's going to take another meeting, maybe two, to figure out after we get the guidance, which we have no idea when that's going to come. I mean, it could come tomorrow, it could come in a month. You know what I mean?
True.
Because we,
yeah,
the committee could make a decision in the next week or two. I don't know how long it takes to put them in a vote from the whole board to decide on this $1,200 and put money into their pockets within the next 3-4 weeks. Have money in people's pockets while we wait to see what happens with this money that, in all realistic, we're not going to get for another 2 months. That would be the earliest that we would be able to have funds in our hands with the way that this is all playing out so far.
Right.
I mean, if everything fell into place starting tomorrow, it would still be 4 weeks before anybody saw any kind of movement with the money. So,
Brian, is that something we could do? Pretty much what she's exactly saying. Could we make a, you know, is there money we could vote on even today, or if we have to schedule another
pay
meeting?
The money back after, we could even vote as a committee, can we vote to pay the money back to the budget if we take it now, just to help operators who, again, and I may be wrong and I may be the only person in this, and feel free to speak up and say, hey, I don't think you're, I think you might be alone and I'm sorry for what's going on with you, but, you know.
Oh, and everybody's situation is unfortunate, so don't feel like, you know, if you don't advocate yourself, not many people will. So that's
you're
that's,
not alone.
I'm glad you bring it up, but I just want to
you're
make sure that we're able to do something like this, and that's why I was kind of looking towards Brian. Is that like, just because we make a motion, say we vote to do the $1,200, is there actually money that we could be used for that? That's my kind of question.
Well, from a budgetary standpoint, as Tyrell indicated, I think that the budget could absorb that amount of money. Certainly, you know, the vending commissions are down. They're down well over $200,000 compared to the 12-month period from the prior year, where we've also kept the fiscal position vacant. So we're not paying that salary in fringe. There aren't locations open right now, so we're not having to pay for equipment maintenance and repairs and new purchases. So I think that the money would not tilt the budget in a bad way.
And negative.
The perspective of how the money was applied, so keep in mind that the idea was that was in lieu of vending facility operators providing a vacation coverage week for the facilities, because all the facilities were closed and we were kind of at the height of COVID. So we don't know whether or not facilities are going to be opening by May or June or whatever. So you'd be making a motion based on the presumption that that this is in lieu of facility being covered for 1 week of vacation. So I would think that if you stay true to how it was applied the last time, which is in lieu of that 1 week of vacation coverage, you're going to take this money to make whatever your own arrangements are, but not then expect it, let's say you get to open, not expect to have a field rep there to cover a week for vacation, let's say in August or September. And I would think that the same principle that allowed it to be the first time would be the same principle to allow it to be this time.
Understood. Now adding a variable to that, could somebody choose? Like if somebody said, you know what, I'm in a better position than Brandy. I don't want the $1,200 now. I'd rather just take my vacation. You know, I want to
it based on their individual circumstances, and that gives them the option.
Right. I'm just thinking if somebody still wanted, you know, if say they open in April, just throwing that out there, and they already have vacation plans for August, and they want to have station cover, facility coverage, you know, they would forego their vacation pay. You know, if they choose. That's just an idea I was thinking.
Motion could be around the fact that operators this year have the option of choosing to take the financial difference of what it would be if they had a field rep there, or they could choose to take the field rep covering the facility for 1 week, you know, based on their individual choice. I have no way of knowing whether that will be considered offset money, but since it's 2021, as long as they're saying it's only about 2020 and nothing about 2021, that I can go to presume this 2021 money will not impact anything to do with that incentive thing. But until we actually see it, you know, that's
right.
All I'm trying to say.
Understood. Well, that said, I mean...
Are we going for the motion, or...?
I was just going to say, we can go for that motion right now if somebody wants to make it. Any committee member?
I'll make a motion that the operator can request those vacation funds.
Who made that motion?
Chad Barr.
Chad?
And that would be in lieu of the field rep. Can I get a second on that?
I second it.
That's Dave Bellagio.
Is that David?
Yes, Dave Bellagio.
So the motion's been made and seconded. Do we have any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion on the table, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Say no. Any abstentions? The motion carries.
Thank you, committee, for your attention to this matter and helping us out.
And I would be in touch with your field rep for the next step as far as if you have to formally request it. That would be my recommendation.
Correct. I will send something out to all field reps in regards to the option. So,
and by the way, we will calculate out what the value of a field rep for 1 week is this year in case there's been any change.
Right.
It may be a little bit more this year. I'm not sure.
Does the motion have to be amended, or it's just a flat vacation pay?
No, I think your motion was pretty straightforward. You're
right.
Asking that in lieu of 1 week vacation coverage, that operators who opt the desire to instead get the equivalent of the value of 1 week of field rep time in a check, get it. I'm just saying we will need to calculate what it is for this year. I think they got an increase in July, if I'm not mistaken, which may mean that the amount you get may be somewhat higher, not necessarily a lot higher, but we got to use the same formula we used last year.
Right. Okay.
We want to be consistent to what we did. What we did was we took the value of the field rep, salary, and I believe fringe, but Tyrell and I have it. It's just it wasn't something I was prepared to like.
Have
my fingertips.
Well,
we'll use the same formula.
Right. That makes sense. Anything else for open forum? Give somebody a second to unmute if they are. Hearing nothing under open forum, can I get a motion to adjourn?
I shall motion that we adjourn today's meeting.
Can I get a second? That's Amos on the second. All those in favor of adjourning, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, say no. Any abstentions? And the motion carries. Thank you all for your attention. And have a good day.
Good evening.
Buddy,
bye.
Bye-bye.